Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Redmen TV. It's the match preview show ahead of arguably the biggest Premier League game of the season. Yes, it's Liverpool going to the Etihad to take on Manchester City. I'm Steve Hoare. Delighted to be joined by Dan Clubb and Chloe Block, easy for me to say, to talk all about it. I mean, I do know your name.
Yeah, you don't know how to spell it, like, but that's okay.
I completely forgot just how to speak for a couple of seconds that's there, but fine. We roll, we move, it's live, we carry
too
on.
Excited. Yeah,
we're going to. I am very excited. Festive spirit and all that kind of stuff, and of course, big game at the weekend. But yeah, we're going to speak about both teams, how they go into it, a little bit about the international break as well, and of course, a bit of predictions at the end. But Dan, I mentioned before, like, the biggest game of the season. Liverpool's record in this game in the Premier League is pretty grim at best. Mm-hmm. There's an argument to be made if they'd won one or two more games at City over the last 5 or 6 years, we could genuinely be sat here with a couple more titles. It has been that close. It does feel like one of those markers where if Liverpool can go and not get beat at City, it's a huge advantage in this title race, because although it's nice when City drop points elsewhere, it's hard to rely on them doing that if we are going to be trying to win this league title, which is the aim at the moment. You've got to go there and a loss in this game is a massive 6-point swing on the league table. It is a massive one, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely is, yeah. And not just from a points perspective either, because I think we've all been pleasantly surprised by the way Liverpool have started the season. I think a lot of people would have been hands-off to be where we are right now after this international break. I certainly would have done, because I didn't expect this. I felt like we might be sort of trying to sort of re-establish ourselves in quite a comfortable top four situation as opposed to a title race this early, and maybe a couple of cup competitions along the way as well, who knows. But yeah, I think obviously the win would be absolutely massive, but more than that, I think if we can go to the Etihad and sort of go toe-to-toe with them and really sort of stand up and say, you know what, we're the real deal again this season, that'd be a massive statement for me. Because even though, again, pleasantly surprised by just how brilliant we have been so far this season, this is Manchester City. These are sort of champions elect already, aren't they? You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people would have them very much down as their favourites. So if we can go into their backyard and, like I say, land a couple of blows on them and then get a result on top of that, that sort of reaffirms what I think this Liverpool side could be this season.
I suppose as well, Chloe, like, it is worth mentioning the 12:30 kickoff thing is a thing. However, it is for both sides. Usually, my gripe with these can be if Liverpool have had every single player away and the other team have had nobody away, and you're like, that's a big advantage. City have had players all over the world as well. They've had a couple who have been injured for the international break, which we'll touch upon later. I'm expecting that they'll be fine, but do you think that does play a factor into it at all, this 12:30 thing? Because Jürgen constantly talks about it all the time, so it's obviously on his mind. But I don't know, in this type of game, I don't know how big the advantage or disadvantage is. It's 40 minutes down the road and they've had all their players away as well, perhaps.
I think the only disadvantage is that we know how much we've messed up after coming back and facing Wolves, where we played Alexis McAllister, and instantly realised that was a big fat problem that we had. And I think a lot of people, we'll talk about who people want in their predicted lineups, but I think a lot of people would want to see the likes of Diaz come on the left-hand side, because he's up against Kyle Walker, and it's pace v pace there. The problem I have is you can't go and choose them, because they could be jet-lagged, they might not be fit enough, too tired to play. And when we don't have an out-and-out DM, as it is, you know, Alexis McAllister not being available or available from the start is a problem. But also, you know, City are also dealing with that exact same problem. They're all coming back together on the same flight. So you can't really use that as an excuse. And we shouldn't. But at the same time, it just makes the selection a little bit harder.
I suppose the fixtures worked out a little bit better than Indy, that they all got there. It has been, they'll be arriving in Liverpool, I think, we're filming this there. Thursday today. Mm-hmm. Like, they all played. That last time it was, they flew in, had half a session and played at Wolves, because they also had to travel to Wolves, which is a different factor in the city. You could probably leave Saturday morning if you really wanted to. I mean, I'm guessing they might do the Hotel Friday thing, but it is just something to keep an eye on. Our main of the South Americans playing, they've all done well, in, by all accounts, in the international break. They've all played a lot of minutes, which is something to keep an eye on. But the difference between us and City is their best 11 has definitely got one South American and maybe two, depending on how well you think Alvarez fits in. Mm-hmm. Ours, in theory, has four. So it could be a factor.
Oh, absolutely, it could be, yeah. And like Chloe kind of touches upon there, we're not blessed with options, certainly when it comes to DM. I think we'd all rather it was Alexis McAllister. And if he is feeling the effects of what he did in midweek at all, then we might know about it, because we've seen it at Wolves, definitely. But having said that, it was even later getting back onto Merseyside last time. And I think he played at altitude in Bolivia, we played last time, and it looked like he was still playing at altitude at Molineux, to be honest. So, yeah, I think we will have to keep an eye on that one. But as you mentioned, you know, I think there's a good chance to go in today to do a little bit, maybe this of a cool down session, or just sort of assess where they're at and do that sort of stuff. I don't think they'll be doing anything particularly vigorous, and then tomorrow will be obviously a much harder session. We train sort of at the time of the game anyway, so I imagine it'd be quite an early training session on Friday before probably heading up to Manchester, like you say, Friday afternoon. So definitely one to keep an eye on. But I think the DM situation is probably the one I'm most worried about. If Darwin was feeling the effects of his game in midweek, or Diaz, you've got Jota, you've got Cody Gakpo, so there are options there. You can keep them back, you can hold them back for the final 30 minutes or whatever. But I do think, like I say, I think McAllister is probably the one we'll have to be extra careful with, because albeit Endo fine, I'd rather it was McAllister in the sixth position myself at the Etihad.
Absolutely, yeah, makes sense. Let's have a look at both teams then, because I touched one there, Chloe. I think the international break actually came at a good time for both of them. Usually you bemoan international breaks and they are a bit boring, but I think this one, it was all right for both teams. And as fans, I think a little reset was good. Managed to get a bit of Christmas shopping and done all that kind of stuff. But like, Liverpool's bench against Brentford was children. You know, it was Luis Diaz and children. This time, you know, they've all had a couple of extra weeks off. They should all be back. City, you know, they didn't send Haaland away. Ederson didn't go. John Stones is injured. They've got a few themselves. I think Nathan Ake has been carrying an injury. We'll see how many of them come back. But it does feel like, although this game is 12:30 after the break, I think both teams will actually have benefited from that break, because I certainly think Liverpool needs it.
Yeah, we did. You know, we had a couple of players. Joe Gomez, can I say, missing that Brentford game was a bit mad. It felt like both of those injuries came out of nowhere. Mm. We had Gravenberch, Curtis Jones even. So there was a lot of injuries for Liverpool that we needed to sort out. And when, you know, we mentioned Konate and Joe Gomez there, if we would have two more games in the last week, it's a lot to ask Joel Matip to do when we know, yep. And we're trying to protect him. And it's also a lot to ask Virgil van Dijk to do. And look, Virgil only got 45 minutes rest, but it's 45 minutes more than what he would have had playing for Liverpool if we were, you know, yep. Europa League, okay, he probably would have been rested there, but if we would have had two Premier League games, then it's a different story. So yeah, I think it did come at a good time for us, and it was important that we finished on a win before that international break, so it just feels you've got something behind you to go into the City game and feel good about. Yep. So it was a real positive boost as well. So yeah, I think the international break came at a good time. It clearly has came at a good time for them, because they would have had loads of injuries last week. Now this week, I think pretty much everyone will be fit.
Fingers crossed, both teams could be relatively full strength with a couple of key absences.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Before we speak about... In fact, no, let's do it now, Tom. Let's do it now, Dan. I want to speak, sorry, about the injuries. I was about to say John Stones, and then I'll end up with Tom.
Okay.
John Stones looks like the one who could be out...
Mm-hmm.
In terms of City's 11, like that feels like the major one. Haaland's a doubt, but by all accounts, everyone's whispering that he's going to play. Ederson looks like he'll be fine as well. But it does feel like John Stones is going to be missing. They used Akanji in that role, the inverted thing against Chelsea.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a shambles, really. Chelsea scored four, they could have scored eight.
Yeah.
City, but on the flip side, City did score four, you know, they got there as well. But that does feel like a real key one for them. Liverpool are missing the left back, and that's a key one. But in terms of, like, if you're looking at City's team, I think that the spine of their team is awesome, and it does feel like one of their better players in that spine could be out, which could be something for Liverpool, especially if it is Akanji trying to target him in. If he does do that thing where he rolls into midfield, it feels like that could be something Liverpool try and take advantage of.
Oh yeah, John Stones has been absolutely integral for them in the past sort of 18 months since he did that sort of switcher system. He's been brilliant at it. He's one of the better sort of exponents of that. I think we've probably got the best one in terms of his passing ability, obviously in the shape of Trent, but in just the all-round sort of way of doing it, I think John Stones is probably the best, to be honest with you. So if he is missing, it'd be massive. And as you say, Pep Guardiola isn't going to change his approach because a player's injured. He's going to carry on with the same sort of tactics, same sort of system. And if he's doing it with Akanji, then sound, because I think you can exploit that a little bit, to be honest with you. I don't think it brings us anywhere near as much in the attacking sense either, and defensively he's not quite as solid. So certainly in that role,
Chelsea
targets
it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Liverpool will do the same. And I think Liverpool will target Man City sort of full stop, to be honest. I think the best way going about this is to sort of have a go. They're going to play with a particularly high line, and they're not the quickest back line in the world, barring Kyle Walker, of course. So I think Liverpool will. And they mentioned Diaz earlier on. That could be a sort of an interesting play. I think Darwin Nunes, likewise. If both of them are fit and ready to go after their sort of exertions in midweek, I'd be very, very tempted just to go with the quickest possible attacking lineup that we had, because you're right, you can exploit your Akanji in exploiting the lack of pace elsewhere. The only way place you can't do it is, of course, on their right side. But yeah, I think in terms of the missing players, I think even the Haaland stuff and the Ederson stuff, you joke that like they probably will play, and I agree, I think they probably will play. But if they are carrying knocks or niggles and they're not quite 100% and they have been a little doubt, then that's fine. Like, if they're not at it from the outset, or they are a little bit concerned about something, and that can only be a positive for us, albeit I do think they'll line up. If they are carrying something into the game and they've had to sort of last minute fitness test or whatever it is, that's a little bonus for Liverpool.
Absolutely right, both teams need to be at it. And on that clue, I suppose this is going back to the 12:30 thing a little bit. You can't, like, Liverpool started slow at Wolves and they were able to turn it round. They've had a couple of these early ones where it's not been, you know, it's taken half an hour to warm into it. You could be 3 down away to City. You know, if you're at 80% and they're flying, it could be game over. It does feel like that, you know, the start of this game. Can you imagine it being the ferocious pace that Liverpool City games are usually played at? Because I think for Liverpool it might have to be. I think it's hard to just play, go, you know, try and sit back off City like Dan says. You are going to have to be at them and in the face. That's what Chelsea did. Chelsea went and gave them a bloody nose. Arsenal went toe-to-toe with them and got a very late winner in the end. It does feel like if you're going to beat Man City or get someone, you've got to fight fire with fire, and you've got to be unafraid to be on that front foot.
Yeah, you've got to, you know, kind of make them think about what you're doing. And we talk about how much they like, you know, to keep possession of the ball. We talk about the inverted right back situation. They play very high up the pitch, and we've got three attackers there who've got electric pace that if you do use, just get them on the off shoulder every single time. And every time we win a ball back, and you, obviously I'm not saying soak up pressure, but there will be times where you need to. There's no, you can't go toe to toe with them all game. You'll absolutely run out of speed. But not just that, they just take the game away from you sometimes, and that'll happen. at their ground especially. So Liverpool need to make sure they start quickly. We can't not be switched on from the off, because they tear teams apart. They did it last year to Liverpool, to be honest. That second half completely got played off the park. Liverpool need to make sure they're at it, they're concentrated, but also know that we have the ability to really hurt them as well. We've got to believe that we can get something out of this game. And that off shoulder, you dancing there.
Yeah, sorry. For those who know, that there's a the sound like, of that noise, there's a burger van or something that starts playing the cricket theme tune every day, which is awesome. But if that got picked, I was dancing along to it, sorry.
Yeah, but I really like the idea of the likes of Darwin Nunes and Salah, and that left hand side, I'm still stuck of who to go between. But Darwin Nunes in behind, like he did against Argentina, I'm all for that against Ruben Dias, because I think we've got them for pace there. Just try and avoid Kyle Walker, please, at all costs.
Mm. Yeah, we've got a comment here from Tom actually, who says Chelsea proved he can be got at big time, and they did, Dan. That's the one thing I take into it. Oh, sorry, if that did come up, I don't know if that could come up. That is right. Like City, I know it's weird. They've let 12 goals, and before them were in that one game. Mm-hmm. But a little bit like us, really. Their defensive numbers are actually pretty good. But if you've watched the games, and it's similar to Liverpool a bit, really, it hasn't always been brilliant. It does feel like you can get at them.
Yeah.
So in terms of they'll be thinking the exact same. We can get at Liverpool, but it does feel like this isn't a game where Liverpool will be afraid. Like Liverpool can outscore Manchester City if they need to.
No, absolutely. I think we can outscore any team in the land, to be honest with you, right now, with our firepower. It's a joke. Like we've mentioned sort of in speaking here, five forwards who could all start. I mean, the only nailed on one right now would be Mohamed Salah, and people make arguments for others, of course he would, but realistically it could be any front three with Salah in it, and we'd all be quite happy. So yeah, Liverpool will absolutely go there thinking we can hurt these. And I don't think either side will be willing to take a backward step. Manchester City, like I mentioned earlier, they're gonna think this is our rightful crown, we're the champions, we're at home, we're going to come on to you. And likewise, I think Klopp, all of a sudden, he fancies us again, and sort of a big marker for fancying us again will be how he approaches this game. He's gone there before now, and he's played four forwards, and he's thought, let's just have a go. I think he does this again. I think he goes there and thinks, you know what, we're going to make a statement, and there's no better place to do it than the Etihad. And by doing so, I think it will be an attacking approach. And we've all mentioned, I think we're never likely to go there and sit back, because we're Liverpool Football Club, and the way Jurgen Klopp likes to play is that heavy metal style. But we've never been to the Etihad really with this technical a midfield before, even, which is interesting. We've always had that combative, that engine room midfield, but now all of a sudden we've got Szoboszlai, we've got Gravenberch, we've got McAllister, we've got technicians in there, so it will be interesting. I still expect Manchester City to dominate possession, because that's what they do, death by a thousand passes, whatever. But I do think as well, when we do nick the ball back, previously we've been quite counter-attacking-ish in so much as we've got all the pace up front and away we go. But I do think there's going to be times in the game on Saturday whereby we have control of the proceedings as well, because now we have that slightly different makeup, so it's going to be a fascinating watch. It really is. But I often wonder, and Liverpool in previous seasons have sort of, not every season because we've had some massively off ones, we've had a period whereby we've just sort of come of age. We've been a little bit sort of stop start, a bit stuttery, and it hasn't really worked, it hasn't really clicked sometimes, Luton game to lose game, whatever, and all of a sudden in like a patch of the season it's just clicked into gear, and again there'd be no better time for it to happen on Saturday and move forwards, and all of a sudden you look like the team that you are. And it feels like that's coming with Liverpool. It'd just be really nice if it started on the weekend.
That'd be absolutely amazing. I spoke to Jordan from City actually the other day. We've done an opposition preview show on Plus, and he thinks, Chloe, that Pep will pick the same team he picked against Chelsea, albeit there are a couple of injuries and whatever, same team, so that means Alvarez and Haaland both play. You've got Doku as well on that left-hand side, who's been excellent for them. They'll have, again, the Akanji thing, so it looks like Stones is going to be out. Bear all that in mind, and again, that is a bit of a predicted guess. It's Phil Foden playing almost like a right winger. He's had good games against Liverpool. If that is the case and they go for that, it's Gavardio at left-back and Kyle Walker with Akanji doing the floating thing. We need to pick a Liverpool team that can stop that but also combat it. How big a factor do you think those things play into Jurgen? I'm thinking, for example, at left-back, does he trust Costa? Does he want Costa, who is the next left back? Is he, because he wants to attack Manchester City's, Liverpool have had some joy against Manchester City attack on that left hand side. Luis Diaz and Sadio Mane used to give Kyle Walker problems, and they've tried to push the other winger back. Do you go more solid? And there's a Joe Gomez question, provided he's fit. That is the that decision is almost like a microcosm of Jürgen's tactics going into this. Do you go and fight fire with fire and go, right, it's cost us front foot, get crosses in, attack, or do you actually be a little bit worried about Phil Foden and the attack and threat Manchester City? You've got a bit more conservative with Gomez at left back.
It's a hard one to say, especially with the fact that I've got no idea when Joe Gomez is expected to be back.
Let's presume he's fit. For clarity, we're filming this on Thursday morning, recording this on Thursday morning. The press conference is out until Friday. So
tomorrow, yeah.
Let's assume everyone's fit except Robbo, which we think is probably going to be the case. Then what are you thinking Jürgen's plans would be? Because that decision is almost like a point of how you're going about this game. Are you worried about City, or are you going to punch it in the face?
Yeah, I think we're all very worried about that position, if I'm being perfectly honest, but I think I would go with Costas because the way it's worked for Liverpool in the past is with a flying fullback and Andy Robertson. And I think Costas, what I've been critical of him at this season at least, is sometimes he's not overlapped on the outside to give an option. And yet when he did against Brentford in that second half, he was absolutely brilliant. In the first half, he wasn't that great. But in the second half, when he was getting around the outside and being able to pick out crosses from the byline, he was really, really good. We all know how good he is technically when passing a ball. We love his set pieces as well, which I think might be a big factor. So I would play him. I think he has to be disciplined, he has to be focused, he has to be, you know, switched on. He can't take 3-4 touches and then decide what to do. You're not going to have the time to do that. But also, I think Joe Gomez doesn't offer us that same kind of threat. And depending on who you play at left wing, you might need someone who overlaps. Because if you play Diogo Jota at left wing, you need someone to give him the space. And by doing that, you need to drag Kyle Walker away or a Kanji away. And that gives the space for Diogo Jota to work. And he likes to cut inside. So, yeah, I would go with Costas. I am scared, but it's what I'd do. It's a bit of intent. And also, I guess that means that, like, in my mind, I think he's going to go with Diogo Jota, which would help him out the most as well.
Let's try and pick a little team here then. So, obviously, Alisson's in goal, Trent's at right back, Van Dijk's at centre back. Mm-hmm. Who's the other centre back, Dan? I'll give you first pick. What are you doing? Can I say Matip?
It's going to be Joe Matip. I don't think it's going to be Konaté, just because of the injury. It was given a 2-week time frame by the French Football Federation, which takes us right up to kick off, essentially. And even if he is back, it depends how he's trained, of course. We haven't heard anything about him training over the break. If he trains on Friday, who knows? But he's not going to have loads of time on the training pitch, it doesn't sound like. So I think it'd be Matip. Konaté might be there, he might be on the bench, of course, but I do have a sneaky feeling it will be Joel Matip. I agree with Chloe on the left-back situation. I think it probably should be Costas because he is a specialist left-back, after all. I think if you go, the winger who he chooses plays into that, and likewise, if it's Jota, I think it's definitely got to be Tsimikas. And if it's Diaz, I think that opens up the go Gomez thing, because you have more natural width then anyway, and that would allow Trent to wander into midfield a lot more. If he's going to really overuse that hybrid role, then maybe you do go Gomez, because it gives you three centre-backs anyway. That's an interesting one. But yeah, for centre-back, I think it's going to be Matip, just because Konaté, if he was fit and ready to go, it's Ibu all day long, but I don't think he will be.
Yeah, I think I don't think you're wrong there. I think I'm all right with it as well. I think I'd be fine with it. Let's talk about midfield then, because you guys mentioned before Alexis and what we're going to, and that kind of stuff. We had a comment, actually, I'll see if I can bring it up as we're speaking, saying actually I'd go Endo. It was Tom again. I'd rather have Endo playing in the sixth there person instead of McAllister. Basically, he's a natural number six. What are we doing in midfield then?
We're not going to agree on this, are we?
I don't know. Go on.
No, you want an attack and you want Cody Gakpo, don't you?
I thought about Cody Gakpo. Do you know what I said in the week? I had a sneaky suspicion that Klopp would go with Cody Gakpo, because he's done it a lot. Anyway, he did it away at Chelsea. He's in form. He's playing football. So that's a good thing. Gravenberch was not fit last game, so who knows where he's at. I don't see it being Curtis Jones, personally. I think he lost his rhythm a little bit due to his suspension, stuff like that. And when he did play in the Europa League and the Carabao Cup, I don't think he was at it. And I just had... Cody Gakpo presses really well, and his dual statistics are really good in midfield. I don't love him being in there, personally. I don't think it's his best position by any stretch of imagination. But I've just got this nagging feeling that he's going to go with Cody Gakpo and won the eights.
Okay. I don't think he will, personally. I'll say, I think he's going to say McAllister, Sopper Sly Jones. I think that's the, I think that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
I think if Kersis 1,000,000% plays if he's fit.
Really? Well, is McAllister and Sopper Sly done? I get the endo thing, but no, I don't see
I think if Kersis is 100%, I think he definitely plays.
Because of the balance.
And also, someone who keeps the ball.
Yeah.
I think the last thing you can do against Man City is lose transitions. I think he'll be desperate for Jones to be fit and play.
But I don't want that midfield three. I want Gravenberg,
so
McAllister, and I want Sopper Sly. I genuinely think in transition where we can catch Man City out, because like you mentioned, you know, years ago when we had the Gini Wijnaldum, we had, you know, Jordan Henderson, they weren't transitionalists. They won the ball back. They were, you know, they ran all over the pitch, but it was, okay, give it to the front three and let them attack. It's not like that. I think Gravenberch is our best in transition. The way he turns on a football is incredible and drags us up the pitch. And I think if we're going to be effective in those moments, you need a fourth person. Like you mentioned there with Cody Gakpo, which is why I can say,
yeah.
I just think Gravenberch as an out-and-out midfielder would be better there, because I think he, even though he is very attacking, I think he'd be a little bit more disciplined. He knows the role a bit better. If someone runs off him, he will track them a bit more than maybe Cody Gakpo will. And I genuinely think he's incredible in transitions. If he's fit, I'd love to see him, because I think him being the fourth attacker would be brilliant for
Liverpool. I would be shocked if Jones doesn't play.
Really?
Absolutely shocked. No, if he's fit, I think if Curtis, I think he's nailed on. I think him and Sopper Sly are nailed on.
Do you know what? 6 weeks ago, I'd agreed with that because I felt like he was playing really well and he was a bit of a nailed on starter in the side. He was
every time he's fit, Klopp picks him.
He was brilliant. No, I get that. But like I say, just I don't think his last two or three appearances have been anything near his levels personally. I think he's a really good footballer. I really do. I really like him when he plays. I think he sort of shrugged off all the naysayers that were gone before. I think he's been brilliant in recent times, back end of last season, start of this season. But yeah, something about his form just hasn't screamed out to me. He might have trained really well over the break and he might be fit and, you know, he could be. And if he does start, I have no qualms with that whatsoever. I don't have any qualms of any of these three options we've spoken about, by the way. Gravenberch would be my personal preference. I've got a feeling Klopp will go with Gakpo, but I also wouldn't mind Curtis Jones.
I want it to be Jones, and I think it'll be Jones.
Okay.
Personally, it would be mad. I think we've completely dismissed the Endo thing too quickly, by the way. I would not be surprised at all. I know I think there's a massive chance he plays.
I think that's due to the international breakdown. Yeah,
that's the only reason.
It's a major reason. McAllister was a shambles at Wolves, and you can't afford that.
And they still started him. They must have known going into that game he wasn't ready.
Maybe have you learned from it? And also, I think if you want someone again, especially with the team that you guys are picking with all the attackers in it, I think they might just want someone who keeps the back door closed, because where City kill you again.
Do you think he does that?
I think he's better than McAllister.
But do you think he's good?
I don't think he's Rodri, but I think he's someone who knows what he's meant to be a little bit more.
For me,
he arrives to tackles. He's like 20 minutes behind.
He's playing on delay.
He's on the stream. I'm willing to reserve judgment on him as a footballer right now for Liverpool Football Club. It's too early for that. He hasn't played enough minutes for that. However, in the minutes he has played against the opponents he's played against, I've not seen anywhere near enough to throw him into a game of this magnitude at this level. Plus, we're mentioning the fact that McAllister's been South America. He's been back home in Japan playing footy. He's got a very similar sort of travel schedule.
That's a fair point, so I'm not sure about that.
Myself.
I think he'll go on McAllister. I think he will, but I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Endo.
If he went with Endo, I'd be expecting Gravenberg to start because you need that. And look, Endo, I think, might be a decent footballer for Liverpool. He might, but I don't think he's up to speed at the moment with the league, and that is the problem. You can't arrive late to a challenge against Manchester City because the one-two-touch passing, the way they do rings around you, it's incredible.
Yeah, we've got a comment here. Endo, from GOATS since 97, great name. Endo slow in tackles, I'm scared he could get a red card if he starts. He could have got one last game.
He might not catch the man. He's against Manchester City. Yeah, he's just sky passing like a matador.
But yeah, I understand. I think it'll be McAllister. We haven't really decided too much here, but let's go up front. Salah plays, no arguments there.
No.
Again, the fitness does play into this with Diaz and Nunez being away. I think it's going to be Nunez, Jota.
Okay.
What do you think it's going to be?
I think the same. I don't think you can ignore Diogo Jota's form right now. I actually think sort of stylistically and system-wise, Diaz is the best fit for this game. But I think Jota's just playing too well at the moment to ignore him. And I also agree on Darwin Nunez. Likewise, his form's also through the roof. We've seen what he did in international duty. And I think his pace and his threat in behind will cause City nightmares. I think Pep Guardiola will be having sleepless nights about that already. He'll be pulling his hair out. But the Nunez thing's interesting because what we need from Nunez on the weekend is obviously all that pace and that explosive power that I mentioned, but and it pains me to say this, but we need a clinical Darwin Nunez, which hasn't always been the case, of course, because chances, big chances against Manchester City could be few and far between, and when you get them, you've got to put them away. So we need the Nunez of that 20-minute cameo against Newcastle and what he's done with Uruguay. We don't need the Nunez of squandering big chances against Luton.
No, yeah, absolutely. And what do you think on the left-hand side? Because there's an argument, you can make a case for either of them. Diaz and Jota are actually both in good form. Obviously, Diaz had a little break, but he's been in good nick since he's got himself back in the team. Jota is on fire, scoring goals. Chloe, there's no wrong option here. Whatever Jürgen picks, which is great, you can pick any combination of the five as long as it's got Mo Salah in it. I think everyone's quite content with it, yeah. But I think it's probably going to... I don't think he'll start two South Americans. That's my thinking. And I think he's therefore going to start Darwin. But yeah. There is a massively... Luis Diaz will be feel massively aggrieved in that situation.
Yeah, it's once again, I think if the international break's not there, I think all of the South Americans play in this game. I think Diaz is maybe the one who misses out. The thing is, and I've spoke about it, is that actually when we're in transition and we kind of want a counter-attack, but it's not actually a counter-attack, it's just that they push themselves so high and keep that high line. You want three electric-paced players. And also, Diaz comes short as well. He holds the ball. He can carry it with him. I think he'll go Jota, based on the fact that Jota's been in incredible form. He didn't play the last game for Portugal as well, so he has had 90 minutes off. That's sound. Mm-hmm. However, you know, if Jota started up top and Diaz played, that wouldn't surprise me either, because Diaz has had more of a rest due to absolutely horrific circumstances, but he has had a rest, not mentally, but definitely physically, where Darwin Nunez might have not had that, and if he's struggling, and he always seems to struggle with some fatigue or cramp or something, doesn't he, after an international break? So that wouldn't surprise me either, but I think he will go Nunez, Jota, and if Nunez isn't on that pitch, someone's going to have to convince me that he's extremely injured or something, because he's probably one of the first names on the team sheet for me right now.
Henry says, I want to see Jota against Carl Walker. He's in great form and would run right with his close control and finishing. Yeah, and he could. And that's what he's got. Danny, excuse me, we talked about Diaz carrying the ball. Jota has been a massive threat carrying the ball recently. Yeah. He's won free kicks, he scored goals doing it. It's a different kettle of fish against City. But if you are getting the ball in transition, which is what Liverpool want to take the ball off City and the counter press and the mini counter attacks, for lack of a better phrase, Jota's ideal. Diaz is brilliant and he's really good at it. Jota still offers that more. He still offers more of a goal threat at this point.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah, he is lethal. There's no two ways about that. And his goal threat far outweighs Luis Diaz's. And what Jota lacks in that sort of explosive off the mark pace, he makes up for in his pace with the ball at his feet. He's rapid with the ball at his feet. Like, and Kyle Walker, he won't be sort of counting his lucky stars that Diaz isn't there if it's Jota instead. He'll be, if anything, I think that'd be a harder test for him, because, you know, again, for what Diaz offers in terms of knocking the ball past people and getting crossed and all that type of stuff and cutting back, but Jota will hurt you. He's more lethal in the sense that he's going to drive into the box, into dangerous areas, into places Kyle Walker does not want to be. And Kyle Walker, for all his qualities and as brilliant as he's been for a long period of time now, nobody can tell me he's not got a mistake in him, because they'd be lying. I've seen him make mistakes before, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I've seen him make mistakes. His recovery pace is what gets him out of a lot of tricky situations. People tend to forget that. But yeah, I think Jota, like I say, everything Diogo Jota does on the footy pitch is with the intention of scoring a goal or getting an assist. He is that direct a player.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, he is a little bit, yeah, and he'd be absolutely bang up for it. And as we've all mentioned, his form right now, you just can't ignore him. And I've been one of his biggest critics, in so much as I think sometimes when he doesn't score or assist, I don't really know what he offers. But I think in recent weeks, his all round game's got a lot better as well. So he starts for me.
Yeah, Daz says, I would go with Jota, Nunez, and Mo. And I think I would agree with that one as well.
We've talked about, you said there, you need a lethal Darwin Nunez to show up.
Yeah.
Well, Diogo Jota's your most clinical finisher. Yes. I mean, I think Mo Salah's incredible, but I think, you know, he probably misses the target more than Jota does. He's incredible in those positions, and it's his movement, it's where he knows where to be in the box. He gets, you know, poacher goals a lot of the time. He's still got the skill and everything, and the goal he scored against Brentford is an incredible goal. But if a ball is being whipped in from Trent, I know Jota's going to be in the correct position somewhere to get on the end of it. So yeah, I would go Jota. You need someone who's extremely clinical, and he is that.
Absolutely, he is. Last one I want to speak about, go do the end of the pitch then, and comment here from Burnley, because Haaland against the rejuvenated Virgil van Dijk. Virgil's back, I think Virgil's been amazing.
Yep.
He's had a good little international break there for the Netherlands as well. Got a little break against Gibraltar, got half an hour half the game off, Dan. Last season, it was men against boys. City absolutely wiped the floor with Liverpool. If Virgil's Virgil again and can help keep that back door, it's a massive bonus. Like, this is like, we're saying Virgil looks like, I think he looks like he's back to being the best defender in the league again, maybe in Europe. He's at that level pretty much again. Big test for him this weekend against the most clinical striker we've probably seen in 10 years. Like, he is, it's a massive test for him again, provided Haaland plays. But like, having Virgil being Virgil again gives you a bit more confidence in that particular matchup. You might never stop Manchester City, but you can certainly slow them down a little bit, you know what I mean? And if Virgil's Virgil again, that goes a huge way to Liverpool getting something out of this game.
Yeah, absolutely does, yeah. And I think one of the key points amongst this is, and I agree, by the way, I think Virgil is definitely back to his best. We've all kind of sneakily said it for a few weeks, but all of a sudden, I think after the Brentford game, we've gone, yeah, that's Virgil of old. And the thing with him is he's that type of egotistical type footballer that he'll kind of have a sneaky suspicion about that himself, and he'll know it, and he'll want to face the best. He'll want to challenge himself against Manchester City and against Erling Haaland, and that only bodes well as well. And I think we've seen that again in the Brentford game. He did that ridiculous goal line clearance. He was almost laughing at it. He went, yeah, like, I'm back here. And I think him being up for this fight, and he'll know what happened last year. I personally think he's gone up quite a few levels. There's lots of different factors behind it. The fact it's a lot further removed now from the injury, physically and mentally, that can only be a good thing. The captain's armband's taking him up as well for me. So he'll want this fight on Saturday. He'll want this challenge. He'll want to take Liverpool back up to the level we were at. He'll want to get back up to the level he was at as well. So it's like a perfect storm of Virgil van Dijk now, and it's come at the best time for him because he's playing at pretty much the peak of his powers, and he's coming up against Manchester City and Erling Haaland. So there's nothing he'd like more than to keep him quiet and to keep Manchester City quiet.
The other thing is he qualified with Netherlands for the Euros.
Big
and
boost,
that is a massive boost for him. That obviously we know what happened in the World Cup. Netherlands didn't do as good as they probably
could. He missed the last Euro of injury, didn't he?
He did miss the last Euros as well. So you know, even though he has played some football over the international break, it's good
positive
for him to keep momentum, and it's also really positive at the fact that he should be coming back feeling absolutely brilliant. So yeah, and also just put one on Erling Haaland first five, make sure that he is actually still injured, see if he's got something. Just make sure, don't Virgil do that, one of the midfielders first 10 minutes, just
I wouldn't mind Virgil just smashing him to
be
honest.
Virgil's got a chance.
I don't want to get him a yellow, that's the only thing. Yeah, just put one on them first 5 minutes, set the tone, and see where we go from there.
Yeah, go and press Edison into it. Or see how he is. I'm sure they'll all be fine. I'm sure Pep's just played Pep games. Yeah. Let's have a little, before we start wrapping up then, Dan, obviously the game itself. We're going to bring the league table up. Just everyone knows pretty much where we're at, but just to clarify, obviously Liverpool go to the Etihad, a point behind Manchester City. Arsenal in third level, with Liverpool on pretty much everything. We've scored one more goal on them, which is why we're above them. And then Spurs on 26 points in fourth place. And Aston Villa, who actually play Tottenham, are on 25 points in fifth. Like, if they, you know, if Liverpool lose and Villa win, Liverpool, like, things do can change dramatically. Yeah. It's a massive game, this. And the record at the Etihad is appalling, really. Liverpool have not been good there. They've competed, but very, very rarely win. One win under Klopp in the league, isn't it?
Yeah, 2015
was the first one. Couple of good points there, I think.
Yeah,
couple of really good games. But when you look at the league table and you look at the fixtures elsewhere and stuff, I think a draw is a fine result. I think most people would take a draw. But have Liverpool got it in them to go and win? Have Liverpool got it in them to go top of the table on Saturday morning, do you think?
Yeah, I think they have, yeah. And I think you're right. I mean, the importance of the game can't be underestimated, because we touched upon it earlier, just how pivotal these games have proved to be otherwise in terms of title races. But it's interesting because obviously you mentioned our record at the Etihad isn't great, and you know, so often such importance is placed on these matches, and too often we haven't got the result we desired there. But their record at Anfield isn't perfect either, by any stretch of imagination. They've predominantly been draws with the occasional win here and there thrown in for us. Of course, it was that 4-3, and I mean, they beat us in the COVID year, where by, you know, whatever. But yeah, I think Liverpool have got it in us to go there and win. I would personally take a draw as well myself because it keeps us in the hunt. A draw away from home in this type of fixture isn't the end of the world by any stretch of the imagination. And plus, the next three games for us after that are quite favourable, in inverted commas. So, and the fact that I think if you take four points from this fixture, i.e. beat them at Anfield, take that all day long, yeah, bite your hand off. So yeah. So yeah, I'm confident heading into this one. Probably more confident than I should be. But I just think, we spoke about it earlier, I think the firepower at our disposal gives us a chance in any game of footy. If we can be solid at the back and solid enough at the back, and I think we can with the likes of Virgil van Dijk back to his best now, I just back us to beat anyone. Manchester City, the way they approach the game, it's so stupid to say because they are so, so good. But because they are going to come and try and hurt us, that kind of is good. If you can stay with a foothold in the game and get enough possession, I fancy us because we've got the lads we've spoken about in midfield, the attacking sort of element to that now, which wasn't there previously, plus the attack at the five or funk, which anyone could play essentially. So yeah, but in terms of what it means, I think it's important not to get too hung up on it, because if we do go to the Etihad and it's a good game, we play well, but we get beat, okay, not the end of the world, we move on from that, we can regroup and go again. But listen, I think if we go there and sort of lay a marker down and get a result, anything's possible for the rest
Absolutely.
Of the season.
Absolutely. Looking at the rest of the fixtures then before we wrap up, I'm in like a last man standing survivor pool, this weekend already is so hard. Every game just looks like it's going to be a draw, like that's like every single one. But I'm looking at, so obviously we go to the Etihad, you've got Sheffield United, Bournemouth, God knows, that could be anything, Forest, Brighton, could be anything, Burnley, West Ham, Luton, Palace, Newcastle, Chelsea, Brentford, Arsenal, Tottenham, Villa, they're all like games, you know, teams.
Your bank is Everton this weekend.
Everton against United is the other one. I know it's mad, isn't it, but
who's your banker?
If you're looking at the teams who are in the, I don't know, top six, top four, so whatever you want to call it, the race, Chloe, there, Newcastle, Chelsea, Brentford, Arsenal, Tottenham, Villa, they could go anyway. If Liverpool can beat Manchester City, which, listen, is very difficult, as we've established, the league table could really, you know, Brentford could easily beat Arsenal, Villa could get someone off the Spurs, it could be a draw, who knows, Newcastle, Chelsea, same Everton, Man United, albeit a little bit further down the table, United. It does feel like, again, it's a real, a big weekend for every team coming back there. There's some tough fixes for everybody. No, none of those teams, they're licking their lips at the games they've got this weekend.
No, like you mentioned there, it's hard to really pick the winners. It could go either way. And we were handing out draws to quite a lot of the top four on the Biased Football Podcast. And Chris made the point that you do know that there's not actually that many draws in footy. Like, in the Premier League, there's not that many draws. It's usually a win for someone. So, yeah, it's hard to choose. There are a lot of teams there who could drop points. I think Brentford could get something. Aston Villa could tear Tottenham apart, to be honest, with the amount of injuries they've got. So Liverpool just need to focus on themselves, get their part of the job done. I would take a point, but actually the closer I'm getting to it, the closer I'm thinking, absolutely go for them, get all three.
Absolutely go for them, fuck hell. Yeah. So, fire with fire, man.
So yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully it's a great weekend for the Reds, and it really sets the tempo for the games leading up to Christmas.
Right then,
here we go.
Predictions time.
Oh no, I'm not. You can. I don't like drinks and this stuff. I do it all the time.
Yeah, it's not real,
do
you?
I said 3-2 to the Reds in a barnstormer. I'm fancying it.
You have just took the words right out of my mouth. I had barnstormer and 3-2 ready to say.
Absolute.
Yeah.
85th minute winner from Salah.
I'm in the same boat, but I'm not in that boat. I'm in the Liverpool go 3-1 up boat and they get one back and we have to hold on for dear life towards the end.
We've got Press Salah says 4-2 to Liverpool. Mike is going for a 2-0. Daz thinks we're going to get beat. He's going for a 1-4, which is
worried about, by the way.
No, does anyone get sent off?
That's the thing that could kill this game. Costa. Either way, anyone. And I said this on the preview where with the guys from City X. It was like, that the VAR could do anything in this game, and I hope it doesn't, because if he either goes down to 10, it's a stinker.
But the thing is, if they go down to 10, they won't change their approach either, and we could run riot then.
You know, so vice versa.
Well, I was seeing that firsthand.
I'd love a Rodri straight red.
He never gets. Very rarely. He had to assault somebody before he got his red card last time. But yeah, funny enough, Grant Funk said, "Yeah, a Rodri red card, please, would be fantastic."
Taking on the next three.
Are you refusing
to
predict? Do you think we'll win? Don't have to give me a score.
She does, you can tell. Look at the smile.
You fancy us, don't you, Chloe?
2-1 the Reds.
There we go. Got it. Eked it out in the end. There we go.
We're going to lose 4-1 now. Well,
absolute
done,
mindless positivity out of ground that we haven't won now for like 8 years. But fuck it, that's the Red Men TV
League.
For
Champions
you.
League, we did.
In the, yeah, fair enough, we did win the Champions League. Yeah,
we also beat them at Wembley a couple of years ago. I mean, it's not the end
yet. It's easy. What have you been worried about? Yeah, do come Man and join shitty. Us on Saturday afternoon. Well, Saturday morning, actually, for the Uncensored match build-up. About an hour and 15 minutes or so before kick-off, as the team news announced. Then we'll have the full watch-along here on the Red Men YouTube channel as well. You've got Paul, you've got Chris, and you've got me this weekend, because, Dan, you've got a... busy? Busy weekend?
Not much, mate, no. Otherwise engaged, I will be.
Can we talk about it?
Quite literally.
Engaged? Married?
Yeah.
So send your congratulations. I'm telling everyone, I don't know if it was a secret or not, but Dan's getting married on Sunday, so we've begrudgingly given him Saturday off.
Begrudgingly.
No, we had to make him take Saturday
off. Dan was
going to
work Saturday, the day before his wedding, and I literally told him, you are not working, I will cover that one for you. So yeah, have a good one there, Dan, as well.
Company man.
So you really do need 3 points. That'd be a lovely wedding gift.
Be a good
it?
Start. I take it right now. That's the most important
what,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. What are you more excited for? Your wedding or the football?
Got some comment. Dave says, enjoy your last days as a free man, Dan.
Cheers, yeah,
Mike says, that's no excuse to miss this one. And then Rob says, Dan, just don't do it.
I'm not missing it. This is on Saturday, the wedding's on the Sunday, so we will go.
He's going to watch. He's watching the game. The game's, yeah, for clarity, the wedding is on Sunday. Sunday, we just give Dan a day off to prepare for it, and then we'll all be there as well. So, okay, good luck. Hope it goes all well. Thanks to you guys for listening or watching this episode of the match preview. They do come and join us on YouTube for the watch along. It's going to be an absolute barnstormer. Chloe, enjoy the Etihad.
Thank you.
We'll see you as well.
Hopefully.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.